She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And trust me when I say we're going to give you a lot to think about yet again today. This show is sponsored in part by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. Their mission is to provide services, training, and jobs to people with barriers to employment. Indeed, they are doing that on a major scale, not just here in Southern Arizona, but around the country, and we thank them for their support. Okay, so before I introduce the guests we have scheduled for our show, I have two brief and exciting to me announcements. We have launched the Mrs. Green's World membership opportunity. If you're interested in supporting Mrs. Green's work and our vision for creating a bigger global community of people who care about the planet, we'd love to have you as a founding member. You can read all about it at mrsgreensworld.com, and I personally invite you to check it out and hopefully decide to click on the Join Now button. Alrighty, and announcement number two is we have a mobile app. Yay, finally, so that you can listen to our podcast anytime, anywhere on your mobile device. We invite you to install the free Igloo, and it's spelled I-G-L-U, radio app for your mobile devices. Smartphone, go to the Play Store, put Igloo Radio in the search bar, and push install. It's as easy as that. And I have a smartphone, so I did it. I have a Droid, the lowly Droid, as some of my friends say. iPhone or iPad, go to the App Store. And again, search for Igloo Radio and install, and you are ready to download my podcast. And I can tell you, of course, we always do the test marketing with family and friends who have been on this journey with us, and the feedback is really positive, and they love it. And of course, our big goal is to get more listeners because of the incredible guests we have. So I invite you, Igloo Radio app, do it now. Okay, let's get ready for another truly remarkable guest with a very, very important mission. And it's not just his mission. His name is Mike Bellamente, and he is the executive director of Climate Counts, a collaborative effort to bring consumers and companies together to address solutions around global climate change. From where I sit, there is not a single more important issue. We've got to address global climate change, people. They actually score the world's largest companies on their climate impact to spur climate responsibility, and the other big piece of it is conscious consumption. They focus on the big companies and connecting them with consumer power. Their goal is to motivate deeper awareness among consumers that the issue of climate change demands their attention, and I want to say our attention, and that we have the power to support companies that take climate change seriously and avoid those that don't. And I'd love to say it. I'm an old hippie. We've got the power. You've heard this many times before on Mrs. Green's World Show. So, Mike, thanks for your patience for that really long, breathless introduction, and let's get on with the show.
Hey, thanks, Gina. I appreciate you having me on the show today, and I'm looking forward to getting into it.
And I think one of the people that's as excited as I am was Gary Hirschberg, who I had on last week from Stonyfield Farm, and he said, oh, I'm so glad you're having Mike on. I helped start Climate Counts. So it's a perfect segue to, it started in 2007. You've been there for 3 years. Tell us about the beginnings of Climate Counts and how it did come about. Probably from Gary's brain.
Oh, absolutely. He is, especially here in the Northeast, where I'm actually located, and our operations are located at the University of New Hampshire, here in New England. And as you may know, Stonyfield is right down the street in Manchester, New Hampshire. And Gary is just—he's a rock star. He's an environmental visionary and environmental. Yeah, and he's great, and he's got the personality, and he's got the insight and the strategy to get it all, get people jazzed about what he's into. And so we just ride his coattails as much as we can. But the inception of Climate Counts was largely resulting from in 2006, it became a national, if not international, issue, climate change, and largely based on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change releasing a report saying that, you know, this is a man-made issue. We as scientists are 93%, I think they were at the time, now they're 97% share, and we need to address it as a society. And around that time, we had Al Gore coming out with Inconvenient Truth. And that helped to publicize or popularize the idea of the fact that we are to blame, but we also need to be the solution. And I'll get into a bit about how it's been politicized as a topic since then. But because it was such a popular topic at the time, and because it was something that Gary felt very strongly about, he said, well, people, they can see it as doom and gloom. A lot of the messaging around it is doom and gloom. A lot of the messaging is, oh, shit, we're going to die, or, oh, shit, here we have this massive problem, and we're to blame for it since the Industrial Revolution. But on the flip side of that is that people are inherently good, we believe, and that they want to do their part to solve the problem. So Gary's thought was at the time, hey, why don't we give them a tool? As we look at it, we're all consumers. Every one of us goes shopping for food, for shelter, for clothing, for so many different things in our daily lives. And why wouldn't we just develop a scorecard where we are the third party, the objective third party, that cuts through environmental claims of the major corporations, that cuts through the greenwashing, and that rates companies on essentially four criteria. And I'll get into exactly what those criteria are. But Gary said, hey, let's do this. He got Wood Turner, who was the founding executive director and a brilliant mind in this space, to help develop the application. And now we also have an iPhone app.
An app for this too. I saw that on your website. It's like,
sure.
Yes.
There's an app for that. There's an app for everything, Gina. So, we've got a lot of good followers. I think, as you noted, 7,000 followers on Facebook for a small nonprofit. We find that to be a big coup for us.
And, well, I'm jealous, so there you go.
Well, we've got a nice cult following, and it's the folks like you that help get this issue out in the forefront that just help us get the followers we need to do the job we need to do. So,
and from the very start, it was not a gloom and doom approach or a gotcha, but more about hope, possibility, and change. Is that a fair description of the approach?
Yeah, without a doubt. We've been very delicate in how we message, or perhaps very targeted in how we message our approach, to not be negative, and to make sure that we're not necessarily just putting on a pedestal global corporations that have great emissions targets, but rather coming to consumers and saying, hey, there are companies that are taking a forward-looking approach, and they are looking, they're saying, hey, Unilever happens to be the top-scoring company on our traditional scorecard, and they have a sustainable living program that says, hey, we're going to reduce by half our environmental impact by 2020 while doubling the size of our business. And that's just huge, and I think people...
Wow.
They don't recognize that a lot of companies out there are taking some really big leaps in innovation in this space.
And there'd be a great show guest. So, needless to say, I noted that. Boy, it's like that would be a really good one. So let's talk about, this is a two-part question because I've been getting picked on lately for my five-part question. So this is only a two-part. What do you actually do? Walk us through the process and how you select the companies to assess, of which there are many. And I encourage people to visit climatecounts.org, and you'll go down the rabbit hole like I do. What do you actually do in terms of assessing a company, and how do you pick them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the most difficult task from the outset.
No kidding.
How do we figure out? There's millions of brands out there, millions of companies. And for one, Unilever Your audience may not be familiar with Unilever the Enterprise, which is a UK-based corporation of 400 different brands, of which those brands would be Dove soap. Ben & Jerry's is owned by Unilever, Ragu, Body Axe Spray, all these different brands.
Wow, they're a big dog.
Probably,
yeah,
they're a big dog. But what we wanted to do in large part was select 150 kind of what we knew our capacity as a small organization could handle, 150 major consumer brands. So the brands that we see on any given day as we're out. So we have the banking sector represented. So you'd have Bank of America. You'd have Wells Fargo. We have, hotels, Wyndham Worldwide. We have, Hilton, apparel, Nike. Patagonia is not on our scorecard, but they should be noted for their strong environmental focus. And we just take all these companies, and basically we have a host of scores with either MBA degrees or they've got some knowledge of the business side of this. And we look at companies through the lens of four different facets. So number one, are they measuring their greenhouse gas footprint? And for your listeners who may not think of greenhouse gases, so carbon is the greenhouse gas that everybody knows, but there's six others or five others that the Kyoto Protocol lists out as methane and sulfur dioxide and hydrofluorocarbons. So we look at first, are they measuring their footprint? Second, do they have a commitment to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions? Usually it's like a 2020 goal, 10% by 2020 compared to a 2008 baseline. Third, are they reporting out, and this is very important because they could be doing X, Y, and Z, but if they're not reporting out in a publicly coherent manner, it doesn't really get them anywhere. So we need that reporting aspect, and we need companies developing sustainability reports and notifying the public of their progress towards their goals. And then finally, and we think this is an important one because, as we all know, our political system is in disarray, and unfortunately a lot of corporate interests are able to influence campaigns based on how they finance, especially since Citizens United. So we look at policy. Is a company standing up in favor of carbon and energy policy, or climate and energy policy? And that's a big one for us. And we think that more companies need to be vocal to this administration and the future administrations that, hey, we need some. We need either a carbon tax or we need a cap and trade. Or I personally think a carbon tax. But so that's basically what we do. And then every year we release our scorecard, usually around December, and we get a lot of media around it, and everybody says, okay, so these are the companies we should look out for. When we have a pocket shopping guide, bring that shopping guide with you to the mall, download our iPhone app, and then make conscious decisions when you're purchasing goods and services on which companies you're buying from.
Like, to me, when you talk about preservation of the planet, I mean, that nails it. But it does answer another one of my questions. I want to make sure that I understand it. So if a company doesn't publicly disclose their company's information about climate change, if they don't have, CSRs on their, on their websites, you can still score them. Right? Because you can look and see. So they would get like a zero on one of the areas, for example, on a score of 1 to 100. If they're not publicly disclosing it, that makes their score lower. Is that correct?
That's right. And you bring up a great point. So the scoring system is on a 0 to 100. The closer to 100, the better the company is. We have it broken down into four quadrants. So either you're stuck, so the companies that you're talking about that don't disclose, that don't have goals, they'd be stuck in the red category. So picture a stoplight. Yellow is starting. That's like 13 to 49 points. Then you have striding, which is 50 to 75 points. And then we just, because so many companies were doing really well, we have a soaring category now for companies that are really doing yeoman's work in this area. So Amazon, McDonald's, some of the fast food chains Surprisingly, a lot of toys and children's products companies are low scoring because they're either Chinese chop shops that don't have much regulation, or they're just not visibly representing their data.
And that's one, when you talk about the power of the consumer, we could flip that switch in a week. I mean, honestly, if people stopped buying the brands, and, you know, it's like we don't want to really pick on McDonald's, but it's okay. If they, you know, if everybody boycotted McDonald's for a week, I'm not encouraging that, but it would be a good thing, and it would help with getting attention. If you ask me, it's like the power of the people. So,
The power of the purse. That's what we call it.
The power
it,
of the
sure.
purse. It's like really vote with your purse. You vote every day, numerous times a day. So, from what I can find from my research, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, you actually have 17 different sectors, and they're vast. Like there was nothing else I could think of, including media, which, you know, maybe I'll get a scorecard someday.
Sure.
Put Mrs. Green on the list. But give us an example of one company in one sector of that you scored and that you had an impact. They didn't like their score. They cared, and they changed. Can you pull one of those out of your head?
Yeah, absolutely I can. Levi Strauss, it just so happened that you and I were talking before the call about Levi's, and they've done some really incredible work lately with their waterless jeans and now wasteless jeans, so less waste in materials, less water, and how their dyeing process and their cotton production process to develop the jeans themselves. But when our first scorecard first came out in 2007, the former CEO, his name's failing me right now, saw that they were one of the lower scoring apparel companies on our scorecard. Within 2 weeks, we had a call from their head of marketing or their head of citizenship, I believe it was at the time. And they said, we don't want to be scoring low on this topic. We think it's a very important topic. And they got involved with us. They said, hey, how can we do better in this area? They put the resources towards what needed to be done. So they had, they developed a program. They developed some metrics and some targets. And they said, okay, here's where we're trying to get to in 5 years. Let's take the baby steps to get there. And sure enough, 5 years later, they're one of the top, the higher scoring companies, I should say, in our scorecard under the apparel section. So that is just one instance. We get a lot of anecdotes about that. How companies, they didn't like what they saw, and it was a mirror, and they said, okay, let's change what we're doing.
And when you're talking about companies of that size, I think you make a really good point. You can't just flip a switch and say, okay, we're going to change that next year. It takes a long time when you have a vast network of suppliers and the chain of all that's involved in it. You just don't say, okay, we're going to do better next week. You just start. I mean,
right.
I think it's a really good point, and that's, I love your category, the categories that they're starting and striding. I mean, those. I would love to have been in that think tank to come up with those clever titles, because I think they're really good, really, really good. Okay, so we're going to take a break, believe it or not, in about a minute. But one of the sectors I'd really like to talk about when we come back, and you can tell me if it was Gary's idea or not, because we just want to make him a rock star. Like everybody is.
Sure.
I am in his tribe. That's all I can say. I'll be his Sherpa if he wants me to. the category. Yeah, don't tell him I said that. Industry innovators, because that was a category that was added in 2010, and it's not top of mind for somebody. Like, what's an industry innovator? So I think we should elaborate on that, and you can tell us how you came up with that one and who the charter members are, because it is another affirmation of your hope, possibility, and change. And for our listeners, go to climatecounts.org. It's one of those things where you go down the rabbit hole and you're like, you got to be kidding me. They're doing this, and you got to be kidding me. They're doing that. And of course, Mike, we'll talk about the whole initiative you have about on campus, the things that you're doing about Climate Counts on campus, because the kids are our future. And we'll cover a lot more when we come back, cover some of the categories. And everybody, if you just joined us, we're having a great, rapidly moving fast forward conversation with Mike Bellamente. He is the CEO of executive director, sorry, of climatecounts.org. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back. Lots of good stuff to share in the next half hour. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I am sure that we are giving you a lot to think about today. Another great show, great topic, great guest. If you've just joined us, our guest today is Mike Bellamente. He is the executive director of Climate Counts, a collaborative effort to bring consumers and companies together to address solutions around global climate change. They actually score the world's largest companies on their climate impact to spur climate responsibility and conscious consumption. And I will tell you this, I mean, I interview guests every week. I call Kelly, who's our show producer, and I say, that's one of the best shows I ever did. And I mean, Mike, this is exciting stuff. It's big stuff. It's really important stuff, because if we don't change the climate, it is the gloom and doom. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I know it. But getting from A to B, I think, is the important part. And at least if we start putting that in our, as our...
Mike, are you still there? Because you have gone silent on our end. I don't know if something was pushed. You're still on the line. So there's a little bit of a void here. And I actually think what we should do is hang up and call you back. I hope you can hear me. There is a glitch.
I can hear you fine.
Oh, good, good, good. Are you there? Okay. I don't know what happened, but we'll definitely call you back. And I mean, that glitch in the matrix, I think I kind of cursed us. But anyway, everybody, thanks for your patience. Stay here with us. There is a big storm in our area, and you never know if that's what is the cause of it. And I love it when I hear glitches on NPR, because they have them too. We are interviewing Mike Bellamente. As I said before, he's the executive director of Climate Counts, a collaborative effort to bring consumers and companies together to address solutions. So we've got him back on the air. And Mike, sorry for that little glitch. And we will
continue where we left off. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Absolutely.
Mike, it was so weird. Like, all of a sudden, you went silent. So anyway, who knows? It's the glitch in the matrix. Let's talk about industry innovators. You added that category in 2010. Pretty much all companies our listeners would recognize were founding members. So tell us about that category, industry innovators.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I mentioned at the start of the conversation that we knew when we began this operation that we only had a limited capacity, and it takes a great deal of time and resources to look at a company and do the deep dive into their environmental reports, into the environmental data that's there to understand how a company is really performing in this area. So we chose 150. After the first couple rounds of scoring these companies, we started getting knocks on the door. We started getting companies that said, hey, we love what you're doing. Can you add us to your scorecard? Because we know we've got a commitment to this issue, and we want to be represented.
How awesome is that? Like, let's press pause. And if I used to ring the bell on the show, that's a bell ringer, because when people are knocking at your door, the shift has started. It's a great one.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And you know, this was something that we said, well, let's make this into an opportunity for us to raise the bar and to raise the visibility on the companies that really want to stand out in front, that they have made the commitment. They've done the basic groundwork to do those four things I talked about, to reduce their emissions, to have targets, to report out, and to have a policy stance. Now they want to be vocal, more vocal in how they're approaching the issue. So we said, okay, well, why not? Let's develop a program. And I can't take credit. It was actually Wood Turner, the founding executive director, that came up with the name. But Industry Innovators, our I2 partnership program, our first companies that joined that program, you know, either they were, the reason that they weren't on their traditional scorecard may have been for a series of reasons. Maybe they were smaller than the largest 150, so we choose each company by revenue, by size. So let's say Timberland. Well, they're owned by VF Corp now, but at the time they were a smaller apparel boot manufacturer, retailer, and they wanted to be on our list. And we said, geez, you guys do great work. They had this really cool thing with the nutrition label on their all the boots that they sold that told every consumer exactly how much waste was used in making the boot, exactly how many emissions were used.
That's huge. That's huge.
It was super cool, and it was super innovative. And we said, hey, why should they not be on our scorecard just because they're smaller than the big guys? And so we said, yes, absolutely, we want you in. A couple others, so Amtrak. Amtrak didn't fit necessarily into one of our categories. We had airlines, but we didn't have transportation. We didn't have cars, but we did have airlines. And we said, you know what, it would be cool to have Amtrak just because they're an alternative to flight, they're an alternative to air transportation, and they also have some really cool goals and things that they want to do with their programs. And then you have others like REI, Shaqley, Kohl's, Clif Bar, and Levi's.
Ben and Jerry's, we have to say that, because that could be like a guilt-free ice cream experience. They're in the innovators.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, totally. And it's they had this great ad campaign. I don't know if any of your listeners saw it, but they had a picture of an ice cream cone, but instead of the ice cream, they had the world, the globe on top. And it says, just like our ice cream, if it melts, it's ruined. And that says it all, you know. So if it melts, the world's done, you know. So
let's, if it's okay with you, let's just rag on McDonald's for a minute, because they have taken out big, huge, you know, the bus benches all over our city, and they have, you know, like iced tea and Coke and a couple of other things. And it says climate counts. And I mean, you should hear the words that come out of my mouth. I'm like, you're really doing a play on words for climate counts because you're serving a cold drink? It's just so.
Oh, man.
That's just my little rant.
They're using our name? Maybe there's a lawsuit.
I think that there's probably some type of copyright infringement for sure. So we have to find out about that. But it disgusts me. So, but airlines, one of the things, segue, my whirling dervish brain may have kicked in. I'll try not to have that happen. But it really surprised me who got higher scores. Like, we had one of our best shows ever, highest number of listeners for a live show, with Southwest Airlines. And they are doing a lot. But their score was 55, and someone like Lufthansa was 77. And, I mean, even Delta was higher. No, Delta wasn't higher than Southwest. But, I mean, come on, Southwest. It was a great show. I'm, you know, thrilled at what they're doing. But that is not a particularly impressive score, or is it?
So you got to take it in context.
Okay.
And they might have, and keep in mind that what we score is primarily on a commitment to climate change. So then
right.
a company might very well have other environmental activities that they're involved with that aren't related to reducing emissions. And inherent with airlines, which happens to be perhaps the only sector on our score that on our scorecard that is traditionally relies on fossil fuels to run its business. Well, every company does to an extent, but when you're trying to get passengers from point A to point B, there's massive amounts of jet fuel that required to get you there.
There's not a really good plan B in place at this point. That's a very good point.
And you are starting to see United Airlines, Lufthansa, Air France, they're starting to do passenger flights with some type of biodiesel, biofuel, at least mix. They might have been, some of those companies might have been quicker to on the adoption of some of those fuels. But realistically, Southwest Airlines does have a striding score of 55, so they're above that 50-point threshold.
Right, right.
I wouldn't necessarily say that they're a complete laggard. They have goals, and they're a sound company, and I fly them when I can, especially when we're going to the Continental Southwest. So.
And if you're in Tucson, you're flying Southwest, and I love them. I love how much fun they are. I love how they make me laugh. I love how they're in and out. They're on time. So I just I hopefully will see forward motion on their part, because you're right, fossil fuel is what gets me from point A to point B, and there's really not any getting around that. And another one in the travel sector is hotels. This is where the power of the purse, the power of the consumer, it made a difference to me, because I looked and Marriott got a 70. I mean, that's really good. Wyndham got a 64. I can make a choice when I go to a city and really look at how they've been assessed and make a decision to stay in their hotels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll make one more point about that. There is an industry innovator that not many of your listeners may know, is Saunders Hotel Group. And they're actually a property manager, a property management company for a lot of the major hotel chains in Boston, in the New England area, and around some other cities in the U.S. But they have such, when they approached us and said, hey, we've got some zero waste initiatives going on, we've got low carbon initiatives that we're installing in our hotels, which related to heating, HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning.
Right, right, huge.
We said, hey, we want you guys on the scorecard. Walk with us and be that voice that we need in this area. So, we added them, and you're right. These are the types of companies that when you're traveling, to keep an eye out for.
And once you get the results each year, I mean, do you assess, like, do you go back and you do an assessment on Levi Strauss? I couldn't figure that part out. Is it an annual assessment, or do they get a score and keep it, or are you constantly, you know, updating the report card?
No, they get a score each year.
Okay.
And I will take this opportunity to plug. For 5 years, we did pretty much the standard 22-question scorecard across those four criteria I mentioned. So every year we came out, and consistency. We've been lauded for our consistency in how we do things, our transparency, and the ease of understanding. So the ability for people to take one look and say, okay, I get it, which is difficult in this space. But this year, and actually December of last year, we decided that, okay, we measure a company's commitment. What if we did, and this is the only time we've done this yet, we may add this as a part of our ongoing traditional scorecard going forward, but there's this interesting, innovative concept out there called sustainability context.
Okay.
And just to give you the 30,000 foot on what that means is, scientists say we need to be at 350 parts per million of atmospheric carbon, or 400 parts per million. You get some,
right.
Some folks that say different levels, but we about an idea of what we need for global atmospheric carbon for us to have a stable climate system. So instead of looking at companies' commitments, well, let's look at how they're actually performing with regard to the science-based targets that are out there. And this was a really revolutionary concept. Obviously, it was kind of an inside game because the average consumer doesn't even know this sustainability context principle is out there. But we thought it would be interesting for companies to see themselves in a different light, to say, hey, okay, you've got good commitments, but you're not moving the needle at all. So this was a different look at it, and we don't know if we'll be doing that scorecard again, but we hope to.
And that's it. I feel like it's on Inside Edition. So when you come out with your report, I read that you really do get a lot of coverage. I mean, here's what I'm going to hope, that you get on the cover of Forbes for this, because that would be rocking it for me. It's like, yeah, they do great things about the greenest banks and the greenest companies, but to have Climate Counts report card on the cover of Forbes, I'll use all of my great influence to see if I can make that happen. But
you never know. Absolutely. You never know. In fact, when we did launch, and largely thanks to our PR partner at the time, we were on the front. We were that novel thing back in 2007 that said, hey, you're wondering how you can tackle this big issue on your own? Not many of us can decide what kind of energy source we're going to get into our homes. I live in New England. It's by and large oil heating, and that's what
right,
we get.
Right.
But we can make that difference in our daily lives. So this was that kind of novel concept at the time. And we were interviewed by The Economist. We were interviewed by New York Times. We had coverage on Oprah Winfrey, and it was kind of a cool time for the organization. So,
the big dogs.
You know,
I mean, I looked at it. You had the big dogs. The second coming. I love it. Let's do it. It's really great. And you have so many big dogs in the house when you're talking about Levi Strauss. And before we go to another break, let's talk about one of your rock stars. When I called you to, you know, check the line and everything earlier, let's talk about Nike, because there is a rock star, and tell us why.
Yeah, absolutely. And quick funny story about that is, you know, we say we score the world's largest companies and the largest consumer brands that are visible to everyday consumers. And for 3 years running, Nike was the top scorer on our scorecard. So when it came time in 2011, I believe, to name Unilever the top scoring company, they basically took over the torch from Nike. It was kind of again, an oh shit moment where is anybody going to know who Unilever is, right? So everybody knows who Nike is, but who's going to know who Unilever is? But that aside, we did manage to work around that because they have been such good amplifiers of our work Unilever has. Nike, you know, so everybody knows they had child labor, they had some social injustice issues to contend with in the 90s, and they are one of those companies that said, hey, we don't want to be seen as the bad guy. We want to be seen as the leader. And the takeaway here for the listeners is this is exactly how America should be thinking. This is how the U.S. should be thinking, not, oh, well, shit, if the U.S., if China and India is not going to do it or any third world countries are going to do it, well, why should we do it? That's not the attitude you want to have, and that's not the attitude that Nike had. They said, hey, if we have a black eye, we want to go out and make sure we're making a difference in a positive way. So they put a great deal of resources in solving those injustices in Pacific Asia. And not only that, but also looking at their sustainability writ large. So what are they doing from a waste perspective? What are they doing from a climate perspective, an energy perspective? And how are they being a holistically innovative, good company?
And they included the social justice piece, which a lot of my guests say we can't have a sustainable planet without addressing the social injustices. And I, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. It's, you know what you do, and you do it well, and you measure it. But to have Nike, they're like the icing on the cake and the, you know, the cherry on the sundae, because they cast a broader net. And as a result, got 89 points on your scorecard, which is like a big wow. And they probably said inside their meeting, let's just do it.
That's right. Not bad, Gina. Pretty good, right?
That's from the Jersey Girl. You could, you know, quick on my feet. Okay, everybody, we're going to have to take another short break. And when we come back, I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about what's going on with college campuses, because, you know, I always say children and young people are our future. They're going to be part of the big solution that helps us all remain here. The planet will survive. They'll help make sure we do. Stay here with us. We're talking to Mike Belamonte, from Climate Counts. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World, next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
You already know the Habit Store has cabinets, appliances, and paint, but did you know that we have contemporary and vintage furnishings? You might find a gorgeous new sofa offered at 50% off retail price or an antique mahogany dresser priced to sell. You might also find some great weekly specials on the Red Tag Sale. Keep up with the bargains through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday 9 to 5, Saturdays 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road just off I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And certainly, if you've been with us, if you just joined us, you're going to be thinking, or you have been thinking about how important it is to talk about Climate Counts, about this great organization, climatecounts.org. With me today is their executive director, Mike Belamonte. And Mike, you know, you just kind of want to say Belamonte. It's sorry, but I just
You know, you're not the only one. My wife can attest to that. Like, I called her before we got married. I said, honey, you're going to get a lot of people that call you Mrs. Belamonte.
Mrs. Belamonte, it just flows. But anyway, I only messed up once. He's the executive director of Climate Counts, a collaborative effort to bring consumers and companies, building that important bridge together to address solutions around global climate change, which if you think it's not impacting your life, let me give you that to think about, because it is every day. And this is an organization that is dedicated to being the change we all need to see happen in our world. So, Mike, let's talk about Climate Counts on campus, because that's another thing. It's like, okay, 2011, somebody cooked that up, and tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you mentioned before the break, the children are our future. They're the future leaders. And absolutely, I think they have a little bit of a leg up. They're coming into the world with some kind of foundational knowledge of, okay, climate change is happening, and of course it's man-made. We learned that in science class, whereas when we were growing up, that wasn't even on the radar in high school. So that's a benefit. Number two, what do brands want? What do major companies want? But to have loyal consumers and loyal brand purchasers right from the get-go, right out of the gate when they're in college.
Totally.
These student university students around the country and around the world, they have minds that are just being shaped by their environment around them, and if they see companies performing poorly on our scorecard or performing really well, that might stick with them for the rest of their days on how they interact with that company and whether they buy from them. So that was the impetus for us to say, hey, let's put some focus and some resource and some effort behind getting some kind of corporate climate leaders, getting some student groups around the country involved. So the Students for Environmental Action, corporate climate leaders, a few others that said, hey, why don't you be a distributor of our Climate Couch scorecard? So we get them in orientation packets at various universities around the country. We get folks to table at certain events to say, hey, this is what we do. This is how you can be involved, and get people to sign up and enter contests. And then more importantly, what we do is we partner up with folks like 350.org. So there's
right.
been a bit of a movement lately to get college campuses to divest, disinvest from fossil fuels, either in their endowments or in how their campus is powering their own offices and classrooms. And we thought that was a very powerful. So we've been at the University of New Hampshire on the divestment steering committee. We work with a lot of students around the country on how they can improve on those efforts and how they can get their friends involved. So I think there's a ton of possibility and potential with students, and it's just saying the right things to get them engaged.
You know, when I was talking to Gary on the show about Just Label It, I asked him a question, and I said, you know, I really care about GMO labeling, and I go about my day thinking most people do. And I said to him, Gary, honestly, if we had this crystal ball, and by 2015, you know, we had GMO labeling on every product, do you think the average consumer would care? And he said, you know, Gina, that's a great question. Probably not. There are not record numbers of people. It is growing. It is hopeful, all that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But with students, is there more engagement than the average consumer? You have a view from 30,000 feet because you're working with big companies and working with major organizations. Are there greater numbers of students involved than there are the average citizen? Do you get that question?
That's a great question, Gina. That really is a very good question. And I will say this. I can't say for sure, because we were all, when we were back in, or when I was back in college, you had the hippies that are willing to be activists. And then you had others that were probably environmentally minded but didn't say enough
right.
about it. I think that they're definitely willing to be more than the average consumer who, say, 25 to 35. They're willing to be louder about it. And that's very important, because the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and it draws the attention. If you can get enough students to sign a petition or to activate or to mobilize, you saw it with the Occupy movements, you've seen it with certain things, the equality movement. If you can get those types of people to share it in their social networks on Facebook or across social media, that stuff can go viral. And there's nothing more powerful than students getting together and doing that. So,
and the divesting one is getting news. I mean, that one is getting news. It's making mainstream press, which sometimes I watch the regular networks and I think, are we on another planet? But I mean, they're working. You know, Harvard and big dogs, are the students are making a difference.
Absolutely. And I don't think Harvard has hired somebody to look at it, but I don't think they've committed to divesting yet.
No.
I think they're still being pushed in that direction.
And I think that you're right. We have to pump up the volume, and it will help. So you have a, it's called Green Watching. That's on the, it's a actual photo stream that engages students. And I actually wanted to read, I rarely do this, but this, what you wrote about climate counts, Two students, it says, wants to be one of your most important allies in inspiring meaningful climate action on your campus. When individual consumers make climate-conscious choices, companies listen. But when entire campuses flex their consumer muscle, the impact on companies is tremendous. We need your help in amplifying more voices committed to changing the way businesses think about their response to global climate crisis. Everyone shops. Everyone has a voice. And to me, I mean, I'm not on college campus as a student, but it's like, there's the message. Everyone shops. Everyone has a voice. I loved
That's
it.
Right.
It was really That's brilliant. Right. Now, what about, you've got to have challenges and limitations. Can you share with us what some of those are? Because I'm sure it's not all kumbaya and Hakuna Matata, to just be a little cliche. What are some of the limitations?
No, absolutely, and it goes back to the crystal ball of what you're talking about with Gary, and will people care in 5 years, or will keep people care in 20 years? Well, the problem is right now people don't care enough. You know, if you look at a recent, I think it was a Gallup poll that was done in March, that places climate change roughly second to last, only to race relations. And the things that were above it were obviously the economy, jobs, size of federal government, access to health insurance. I mean, the list went on, and then, you know, climate change is sitting there down there at the bottom, 24th out of 25th. So that just tells you where it is in the mind of the average American. And it, good, bad, and indifferent, that's just where we are. And it isn't necessarily top of mind, because it is an abstract concept. It is a complex subject that, geez, if I change out a light bulb, if I you know, turn off some lights at the end of the day, if I, you know, recycle, if I do X, Y, and Z, that should be enough. And I got to get to work. I got to feed my kids. I got a lot of things that are more real world, are really tangible in my everyday that I've got to be concerned with. So what I think that is absolutely a limitation, but in my mind that's also an opportunity, that our movement, the climate movement, it's got to be. There's been so much data that's come out, and obviously there's been so much denier push from Big Oil and the Koch brothers and everybody on the right who wants to just make this a liberal issue, largely because Al Gore has been the spokesman for it. But what we really need is more positive messaging. We need, I would call it a pink ribbon for climate change. We need a Livestrong bracelet. We need something that brings people together without necessarily talking about climate change, without putting us in a camp of just the environmentalist hippie, and saying, hey, this isn't an us versus them issue. This is an us versus us. This is a societal issue that has to be all hands on deck. And that's white, black, you know, European, American. We all have to do this. And I think that would go a long way. So that's been my rallying cry. And I've been kind of working with some folks to say, hey, how can we do this? Because there are a lot of middle-of-the-road folks out there who know it's an issue, but are leery of joining, of being seen by their neighbors as an activist, or being too edgy, or being too hippie. But hey, if Bono can take the taboo out of AIDS with something
right,
like a Product Red, or if you could take the taboo out of testicular cancer with a yellow bracelet, well, shit, we should be able to do the same thing for climate change. It's just about framing it right, and it's just about getting that powerful, inspiring, hopeful message behind it in a way that says, yeah, why wouldn't I do that? That's a no-brainer. And if we do that today, it'll be like, you know, smoking or the seatbelt movement of years before, that the next generation will be like, oh, of course, you know, that's exactly what we should be doing and why we should be doing it.
It's what I wake up every day having hope for. And it's like, it's not like there's not enough apolitical scientific evidence, Mike. I mean, I had this really great guest named Gary Nabhan, and he's, you know, a hot topic now because he's written 26 books. Seriously, I was like, how can I interview this guy? Dude, like, you wrote 26 books and you're doing a lot of other things too. But he wrote a book recently on, you know, basically farming in drought conditions. And he had spent a week at the White House. 2,300 counties in the United States experienced severe or extreme drought in 2013. That's not a political statement. That's just, that's the counties reporting. And, you know, one of my heartbreaking topics, and I have not had a guest on, is what's happening to the bees. And, you know, it's like you can be funny about it and talk about the birds and the bees, or you can look at the pictures and the videos and the devastation of the bees, and Albert Einstein saying we can only survive 4 years without them. Why aren't people listening and paying attention? And I certainly it's like it drives me crazy.
No, I know. And if I woke up and my wife has to smack me out of it sometimes, because you get like, wow, this is such a monumental issue that how is not everybody taking time out of their day to figure it out? But there's not one action. And if you do look at the actions that a lot of the environmental groups have, it's, you know, here, fill out this form with your email and write this letter to your congressman. Like, I don't necessarily feel like that's the way. And what we try to, you know, pivot and take a different approach, but realistically, are people going to take our scorecard into the shopping malls every day and use it? And I don't know. And even if they did, would that make enough of a difference? We need to have a transformational shift in how we're looking at that. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to figure out with other groups right now.
I think you're right. And it's got to be a big shift. And do I think it matters? Indeed, I do. I went to the Monterey Bay. You know, they have the Sustainable Foods Institute every year. And there are 100,000 restaurants now that are participating in their Seafood Watch program, that are sourcing their fish sustainably and, you know, publicizing it on their menus that they are a member of Seafood Watch. 100,000. So that's growing. And they started with one, and then they were two,
that's
and then,
there,
you know, then there was 100,000. So for climate counts and, in, you know, engaging people on campus, I have to believe it all matters, that every little step we take, and you're probably the person that no one wants to come to their parties anymore, because I think I'm that person. They're like, oh God, Mrs. Green is coming. We can't use paper plates. We can't use plastic cups. We can't serve water bottles. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It does bother me. You don't need to put water bottles out at your parties. Use pitchers with lemon in them and all that stuff. So it's like,
yeah, but you know what, Gina? What I will say to that, and I don't know if you've heard this concept before, is I probably get invited to more parties now because I'm considered the carbon offset for my friends, right? So I'm considered the one. Hey, we're inviting Mike. That's good enough. We don't need anything
else. He's doing it for us, and you want to slap him. It's like, come on. I have a chapter in my book that's almost finished, and it's called It's Your Party, and I'll Cry If I Want To, because I go to these parties, and I'm looking, and I'm saying, you've got to be kidding me. And who really likes to eat with a plastic fork? That's what I ask people.
Right.
Because if you're eating with it and you're the one that it breaks and everybody looks at you, it's like, oh my God, there's a hog over there whose plastic fork broke. So don't let anybody kid you. Nobody really wants to eat sloppy baked beans on a paper plate with a plastic fork.
That's okay. Right.
So what is the way that you're supported? We don't have a lot of time left. It's been fun. The time has flown. When I found out you were from Jersey, I knew it was going to be a great show. But how are you supported, and what can people do to help? And we have 2 minutes left.
Okay, I'll keep it short then. We're supported by individual donations, so we do have a donate section of our website. We've been with so much effort from Stonyfield Farm and financial resources, they've been helping us move the issue forward, and we have just a great deal of private funders as well. So I think just sharing the word, sharing it across Facebook, getting it through Twitter, and getting it out there to all your friends, that's the way we really need to be supported. So that's
and download the app. I mean, if you go to climatecounts.org, it is a great website. Like, I salivate. It's interactive. It's easy to navigate. I love your factograms. I mean, I'll be putting some of those up on Facebook, but it's really, it is a consumer-friendly, user-friendly website, and I know that people do end up following from Mrs. Green's World. So a big, huge thank you from my authentically green heart for you and all the work you're doing, and you're invited to any of my parties. I just want you to know that.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you very much, Mrs. Green.
And I want to forward promote next week another miracle. Our guest is Maya Penn. She's a 14-year-old girl who has her own eco-friendly company selling environmentally sustainable fashion accessories and clothing. She developed her first website when she was 8. I don't know. She's another rock star. So please plan to join us. I'm sure you want to hear Maya's story. Everybody, make it a great green week. Mike Bellamente from climatecounts.org, thank you for your big yes.
Thank you.